From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. This morning, a rare interview with Iowa's Supreme Court Justice Marcia Ternus. After 10 years of downsizing, the head of Iowa's court system says justice hangs in the balance. Caseloads are up while staffing levels have plummeted. Iowans face longer delays for divorce, debt collection, and property disputes. Also, after the Supreme Court's ruling striking down the state's ban on same-sex marriage, some lawmakers argue the justices should be elected rather than appointed. This morning, we'll discuss the state of Iowa's court system, the impact the economy has had on access to justice, and the role of the court in determining law. That's coming up next on The Exchange, but first, the news. Good morning. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building in Des Moines, I'm Janine, and this is The Exchange. The economic downturn means more Iowans are facing foreclosures, and there's an increasing number of requests for mental health commitments and domestic abuse protective orders. All requires action from Iowa's courts, where caseloads are up 66% since 1987, but are down 17%, where justice describes as assembly line justice. Today, my guest is Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice Marcia Ternus. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Good morning.
I'd like to start by playing an excerpt of your condition of the judiciary speech, which you delivered to the legislature last month. And I have covered the legislature for 15 years now, and it was one of the most, I would say, compelling speeches delivered by a justice in the sense of outlining the problems Iowans are facing and the problems the court system is facing. And so we pulled just a section of that speech to play for listeners to hear. If we can go to that now.
What does this sad state of affairs mean for Iowans? It means their primary point of access to justice, the clerk of court office, is open part-time. It means they will lose valuable services such as assistance completing pro se forms for small claims, dissolution of marriage, and mental health commitments. It means Iowans will encounter delays in important services such as the processing of child support checks and docketing liens. It means citizens will wait longer for trials and hearings, and will have to settle for assembly line justice. It means pressures to plea bargain will increase. It means that some matters, like distribution of court orders and arrest warrant checks, will be vulnerable to mistakes or will fall between the cracks. While we are doing everything we can in our power to minimize these problems, we simply do not have the staff to prevent them. We are deeply concerned about the effect these problems will have not only on litigants and others dependent on court services, but also on the safety of our communities.
That was Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice Marcia Ternus delivering the condition of the judiciary to the Iowa legislature last month. One of the things that struck me as you delivered that speech is you said this is not an optional service of government, that it was a constitutional imperative, and that it was a function really only government can provide, whereas there are some services maybe government provides that other private sector entities can. Can you explain that?
Well, the problem that we face in the judicial branch is that regardless of the staffing levels that we have or the funding we have from the legislature, the people still need court services. And so the fact that we might be downsizing doesn't mean that we have less work to do. If someone needs a protective order, they can only come to the court to get that. If a child is being abused and neglected and needs to be removed from the home, that can only be done by the court. So our workload doesn't change based on the appropriation that we get from the legislature, because our services are services that only can be obtained from the court system.
Mm-hmm. Let's discuss a little bit about what you've been seeing over the last, you mentioned since 1987, because that was when the state took over full funding responsibility for the court system. Just describe the disparity as the caseload has risen, but the employment numbers have dropped.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's put a lot of pressure on the system. Our judges have much less support than they had when I first came on the bench in terms of staffing support. And of course, when they're getting their own files and going out in the hallway to call witnesses in, they're not able to be in their office in the chambers reviewing the files and preparing for the hearing. And so it causes a real impact on the quality justice when they don't have the support staffing time that they need. We also are seeing a big impact over time in our juvenile court services area. I've said a lot of times in public comment, we only have one opportunity to help these children, the support staff who can get the services to them that they need, who can do the monitoring that they need, just plain old-fashioned encouragement and support. We lose an opportunity that we won't have again. That's a problem that really concerns me, as we've lost quite a number of juvenile court officers, even though we cut that component staffing less than the other components. So those are some examples of the problems we have.
Is there, in part, a difficulty because for some Iowans, or maybe even many, I'm not sure, they don't come in regularly, which is a good thing, largely. Mm-hmm. So they're not aware of the services they provide. They think of it as a little bit like law and order, in a sense, unless they're brought up on criminal charges, they don't think they'll ever come into the court system, which is not the case.
Mm-hmm. That's because most people think of the court system in terms of what they see on TV, the high-profile criminal cases, or they read about some big jury verdict. And really, those are just a tiny part of what we do. Most of our work, day out, involves ordinary Iowans in crisis. People don't come to the courts for adoptions, maybe, for happy reasons. We have a lot of dispute kind of cases, relatively minor cases, but very important to the people who are involved in them. We do foreclosures, debt collection cases, simple misdemeanors. We impact a lot of ordinary Iowans in small ways that don't make the news, but they can be life-altering for the citizens who need these court services or become involved in the court system.
And what would an Iowan today entering that system see differently than an Iowan 20 years ago? What would be the changes?
Well, I think the system, and maybe this isn't a very kind word to use, but it's a little more chaotic because we don't have the staffing that we need to have a smooth flow of business. So the papers that are filed may not be in the court file, so the judge may have a court file that's incomplete. The hearings won't be scheduled as quickly as they used to be because we don't, we're not there every day. Today, for example, the courts are closed. Say about our state when we can't even afford to have the courts open for business.
Is it a furlough day?
This is a furlough day. It's the 10th one I think we've had since February of 2009.
Mm-hmm. And when you mentioned that Iowans don't come to the court system, one, very often, and two, not usually for happy or positive reasons, if it's chaotic, is that more stressful to them? Is that more, I mean,
oh,
if you're
sure.
going through a divorce, you're going through a foreclosure, and then it's already complicated. Mm-hmm. We don't know maybe the system well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole idea, especially in family law, is that the court system is there to help bring some kind of order to the chaos of their lives by resolving disputes over property or child custody or whatever it might be. And so when the system itself is stressed, it translates into, I think, increased stress for the citizens who need calm, orderly, efficient justice.
What kind of cases increase when we're going through the current economic difficulties that we are right now? Does that reflect it in the courts? I mean, you said it was in your speech.
Yeah, it is. We clearly have increases in foreclosure actions, debt collection cases. We've seen a little jump in felonies, and I'm searching for the other one where we have an increase. Anecdotally, mm-hmm. we've heard, and this hasn't been reflected in our statistics yet, but anecdotally, we've heard from lawyers that they think the dissolution rate will be going up because of the economic stress on marriages.
Dissolution of marriage, yeah.
Dissolution okay. of marriage.
Mm-hmm. That being said, you've asked the legislature then for a status quo budget, and you're just talking about the system's already stressed.
Right.
Would you prefer, obviously, in times where the state had money, that you could put back into it, that you could reinvest?
You're exactly right. When times get better economically for the state, I am not going to be shy about asking for additional resources because there's no doubt we need it. And I think the history of our funding shows that we need to be a little more vocal about our needs. When the staffing levels were cut in 2002 as part of the little recession we had then, most state entities had some layoffs at that point in time or staff reductions. I think about everybody except the judicial branch got up to where they were by the time these recent cuts came. They were up to where they were in 2002 before the cuts, or even higher. For example, the regents were 8% higher in their staffing. we were still, the judicial branch was still 7% below what we were before those 2002 cuts. So we've never caught up. And that's why these budget reductions have had such a disproportionately hard impact on the court system. So yeah, in the future, I think we need to really be explicit in our request for funding from the legislature, because we'll need to catch up for what we've lost here.
Yeah, I'm looking at a section of the speech when you expressed to them your concern that the judicial branch had already taken more than its fair share, and that's what you mean by that.
That is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just clarify one of the other reason I think that we've that I said we've taken more than our fair share is we're 95% personnel. We don't have any programs to cut. Like I said earlier, our business comes in whether we're fully staffed and fully funded or not. And so when we have to cut staff because 95% of our budget is staffing. And so that has a disproportionate impact on us as well.
Mm-hmm. And you hear people when they come, advocacy groups that come to the State House lobbying for programs that serve the low income or serve the vulnerable or the needy that maybe really do feel the pinch even worse than other families in economic difficulties. But you don't hear them often talk about the court system. But you're saying the vulnerable and the needy and those pinched by are the ones who are accessing the system or need access to it, sometimes in more greater numbers during economic times.
That's absolutely true. We are there for the needy and the vulnerable. And one of the impacts of these recent layoffs is that we have fewer people in our clerk of court office. Many of these people who need court services, the vulnerable and the needy, cannot afford an attorney. And so they represent themselves in sometimes very complex court procedures. Our clerk of court personnel have traditionally helped people navigate through the system to the extent that they're able. Our clerk of court people are so understaffed at this point, we don't have the time to offer that kind of assistance to pro se litigants. So the vulnerable members of our society are kind of taking a double hit.
So somebody that might have reached across the counter and said, okay, here's the form you're going to need, here's how you fill it out, now they might just hand them the form and they're on their own.
Exactly. And I'm talking about important things like domestic abuse, protection from domestic abuse. Our clerk of court personnel have spent a lot of time helping people fill out those forms. And today, for example, when the clerk of court office isn't even open, that help is certainly not available. We have 26 counties now who have part-time clerk of court offices. So you can see what the impact is on people who need court services and come to the court and we're not even open.
And if they're not open, and if there's not help in filling out their forms, is there a concern that some people will give up, throw their hands up and say, well, I'll just deal with the situation on my own?
Well, sure. Transportation is often a problem for these people. So they may have had transportation to the courthouse today, but they don't have it tomorrow when we're open. It also impacts our ability to collect fines and fees.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break on The Exchange. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio. Good afternoon. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and we're live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building. This afternoon, rather, a rare interview with Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice Marsha Ternus. Before the break, we were speaking about the difficulties citizens face when they go to the clerk of court's office when they're closed. And you mentioned right before the break that it's also difficult then for the court to collect fines and fees. Is that because if they can only come one day a week, or now you're not open when they want to pay?
That's right. We have a lot of people who come with cash, you know, and they're ready to pay. And if we're closed that day, that cash generally would get spent someplace else. That's just human nature. It also reduces the time that our staff has to track down people who haven't paid fines and fees. The other problem in connection with fines and fees is that a lot of times someone's not getting a driver's license because they haven't paid a fine. And they come to the courthouse needing to get their license back. There might even be a deadline for them to get it paid, and yet the clerk of court office isn't open. And it's just not on furlough days. In 26 counties, they're just part-time. So I'm sure that's a big disappointment to those people as well.
Because most of us wouldn't call ahead and check on that.
No, assume the courts are open.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, on that note, when you presented the condition of the judiciary to the legislature, you mentioned that you were going to look for ways in which you might be able to help them bring in revenue to offset some of the needs the courts have. And that, talk to me about that. You looked at your fee schedule and structure compared to other states.
Well, that's one thing that we've done, is to look at the fees that we charge for our cases and compare those fees to surrounding states, just to see if there an increase there. We've also looked at, the judges in the office, and asked ourselves, are there some unnecessary steps here that could be discouraged if we fee when a certain type of pleading was filed, or if a case was unnecessarily continued, or something, you know, along those lines, where the not only raise a little revenue, but we could also discourage the use of the court in ways that are under our workload.
When people file, I don't know what I'm thinking, not, but almost when they want to delay something or that thing, when people use tactics like that to drive up costs, maybe for the opponent? I mean,
well, oftentimes is that we'll have to call jurors the week ahead of a jury trial. And then the case might settle on Friday when it's too late to let everybody know they don't have to come in. So we have all these jurors come in, and we have juror fees that we have to pay, but no case for them to try. And so one of the fees that we've implemented, late settlement fee that applies, that would discourage settling at the last minute when we still, and it's too late to avoid it. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at in addition to just raising fees.
What are some of the fees you could raise? I know that when I spoke with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl after your speech about, well, is there something that you can do to allow them to raise fees so that you don't have to reduce their budget? He said, you know, we're open to that, but we don't want to price people out of justice. So is there a fine line you walk?
There is. That's why we were looking at what other states are charging to get some idea of what might be reasonable and what might be affordable to people. But we are not supportive of raising any fee where we think that it might impede access to justice. So the opportunities there in terms of filing fees, which is in general the kinds of fees we're talking about, the opportunity for raising revenue there is not great because of that very issue of access to justice.
So what might be some of the proposals that would be more reasonable or, in your opinion, worthwhile for consideration?
Well, I think the legislature is probably going to look at fees and fines outside the judicial branch, because there isn't a lot of opportunity within the fee structure that we have in the courts. Basically, we have filing fees, we have a few penalty fees, but not a lot else.
Okay, and when you say filing fees, filing to get a marriage license, filing to get a...
filing fee that is paid when you initiate a lawsuit.
Okay, mm-hmm. And so
if you can't afford to pay the filing fee, then you can't afford to come to court. And justice should be affordable to anyone who needs it.
Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you've been wronged, but you don't have that happens all the time, I assume, that people feel like they can't even, not just the filing fee, but then they can't afford attorney's fees or whatever the case
right.
might be.
Mm-hmm. For small claims, matters, we do have a fairly good system that allows people to bring their claims to a court without being represented by an attorney. But we still have a filing fee to file those claims, and we need to be sure that it's low enough that people can access the courts.
All right. I want to switch gears just a little bit here and get your opinion on a couple of things before you leave us at the bottom of the hour. I'll start with this caveat that you are not able to speak about specific cases and
That's
case
correct.
Law. But I want to ask you, using it to jump into the legislature a little bit, when the Supreme Court last April struck down the state's ban on same-sex marriage, gubernatorial candidates weighed in on this, and one suggested that he would issue an executive order placing a stay on same-sex marriages till voters could decide. Would that even be legal or constitutional?
Well, that's an issue that I can't address, because
okay.
if that
you might have to
event
rule on that.
Would occur, then we would have to rule on whether that was appropriate and constitutional. So I can't comment on that.
Okay. The other one is, we've had some Republican lawmakers introduce resolutions that would say the Supreme Court justices who are now appointed and then have retention elections, they would have to be elected to begin with. Is that good policy?
I think that would be a terrible step backwards. Iowans were bright enough in the 1960s to go to merit selection for judges. So our judges are chosen on the basis of their professional qualifications, their integrity, their ability to do the job. If we would go to political elections, as has been suggested, it would change the entire nature of the judiciary. I think our citizens expect when they come to court that they're going to be heard by a judge who is fair and impartial, a judge who has no, who owes nothing to any political party, to any special interest group, to any particular agenda. When you go to political elections, that's exactly what you're fostering, is those kind of allegiances that have no place in decision-making in the court system.
Mm-hmm. And that being said, you face a retention election. This ruling on same-sex marriage has been politically divisive, at least in the legislature. Do you fear that voters will not look? I mean, what is a retention election supposed to be about? And will it be about issues versus job?
Well, a retention election is designed to allow the voters to vote yes or no on a judge. And because we have a merit system of selection, that yes or no vote should be exercised on the basis of, is the judge performing his or her duties competently and as one would expect a fair and impartial decision maker to perform those job duties. I am confident that the people of Iowa want to retain the system that we have and make it work in the way it was intended to work, and that is on a merit-based system, not as a referendum on any particular decision that a judge might make.
In this climate, though, today, where it is just seems politicism of things seems to be ratcheted up a bit, and, you know, I would assume judges aren't going to spend time, you're not going to campaign. I mean, could you even do that, or would that feel wrong?
Well, I think we can advocate on behalf of the system, mm-hmm. and we can remind our citizens how the system is supposed to work and what the nature and basis for a retention election is. I think it is our professional duty to maybe do some civics lessons and remind people that the third branch of government was by design supposed to be a non-political branch of government so that judges make decisions based on the rule of law. And what that means is we base our decisions on the law passed by the legislature and predominantly the Constitution that was adopted by Iowans 200 years ago. So I will be talking about those issues, and I think it's important for us to value the system that we have. It's easy to take what we have for granted, but I think each generation has to stand up for what they believe in and for the integrity of the system, for a fair and impartial judiciary, and that'll be our test this year to see if Iowans stand up for the system that we have.
Mm-hmm. How do you advocate in your role? It's difficult. I mean, do you go to public events and speak when asked? I mean, it's not going to be advertising, I would assume, where the other people might run as.
Well, judges are not involved in any kind of political forum, but I'm certainly available and have talked to any kind of community organizations, other governmental groups. I do quite a bit of speaking, so those would be the primary avenues that I would pursue to get the message out about the importance of a fair and impartial judiciary.
Supreme Court Chief Justice Marcia Ternus, thank you so much for being with us today. We greatly appreciate it. In the second half of the program, we'll turn to the president of the Iowa State Bar Association, Jane Lorenzen, and the Chief Judge of Iowa's 5th Judicial District, Arthur Gamble, to continue this conversation, and we'll ask you to join the debate. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. We're live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building. Chief Justice has left us, and now we have new guests the second half hour, the president of the Iowa State Bar Association, Jane Lorenzen, and the Chief Judge of Iowa's 5th Judicial District, Arthur Gamble. Thank you both so much for being here today. We're going to rejoin this conversation about the state of the judiciary in Iowa. And Judge Gamble, I want to begin with you. First, for listeners, outline for them what the 5th Judicial District is. What kind of counties or cities are in your district, and so what problems you're seeing?
Well, the state of Iowa is divided into 8 judicial districts. I'm privileged to serve as the Chief Judge of the 5th Judicial District. That includes the 16 South Central Iowa counties, including Polk, on down to the southern tier of counties, in rural Iowa, Taylor, Ringgold, Decatur, and Wayne. So I have quite a variety of courts to administer within the district, from the largest metropolitan area in the state of Iowa down to the smallest county.
And what are the differences you're seeing between the Polk counties of Iowa and the Ringgold or Taylor counties, where, I mean, are there different issues facing these citizens or different access to justice, which of course there shouldn't be in the sense?
Well, the budget cuts have been administered in such a way as to reduce the staffing level of all of our clerk of court offices throughout the state proportionately in accordance with a predetermined staffing formula. And each office is down to below the minimum staffing formula based on a weighted workload. In Polk County, that means that we had a layoff of 12 court employees out of the clerk's office. In our southern Iowa communities, in Taylor County, we're down to one person in the office, just the clerk of court. She's also the clerk of court in Adams County, and there's one person in that office. So in our nine southern Iowa communities in Judicial Election District 5B, we have 16 employees altogether for nine counties. In those offices where there's just a single employee, those offices are closed to the public 2 days a week. And so the impact there is more severe than it is in Polk County, where we are open full-time, with the exception of our court furlough days. And closed to the public two afternoons a week to catch up from the furlough days. But we have the benefit of the economies of scale here in Des Moines, so that we're able to stay open. In southern Iowa, when they're closed, the people who want to have access to the court have none.
Is that a fairness issue, just a fundamental issue of access, which is should not be based on where you live?
Absolutely. It's a very unfortunate situation. But these budget cuts are dramatic. They are below anything that we've ever experienced in the judicial branch in my tenure, 26 years. And we're trying to figure out how to deal with them in an equitable way. Another way to look at it would be that if we subsidize the staffing of the Southern Iowa offices out of our budget, then we'd have to take even more people away from the larger offices in Polk and the surrounding counties where there's more judicial business.
All right. Are you seeing some of the same anecdotal difficulties economic-wise that citizens are filing for more certain kinds of cases because they're facing economic stress?
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, we've seen a huge increase in the foreclosure of mortgages in our metropolitan courts and throughout the system. People coming into court without attorneys, can't afford attorneys, don't know how to defend their mortgage foreclosure action, don't know what issues to raise or how to preserve their homes. The same is true of other debt collection actions and commercial litigation in general.
All right. We'd like you to join our conversation this afternoon. Have you had difficulty accessing the court in Iowa? Are you concerned about it? Are you worried that if you have an issue before Iowa's court system that you'll face less support? If so, give us a call this afternoon at 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Jane Lorenzen, you're the president of the Iowa State Bar Association. What is your role in this? Is this something that's a concern for the Bar Association? Because you represent the attorneys that go into these courts and litigate on behalf of these Iowans.
Absolutely. The lawyers of the state of Iowa are deeply, deeply concerned about the judicial branch budget crisis. And in answer to that, the Iowa State Bar Association developed a task force. We appointed lawyers and judges from across the state of Iowa to take proactive measures and address judicial efficiencies, ways to raise revenue, and ways to collect old court debt that might assist the judicial branch. But yes, the Iowa State Bar Association is deeply concerned about this matter.
What are you seeing as the attorneys represent these Iowans? Are Iowans frustrated? Are they facing delays? Are they?
Yes, absolutely. Iowans are very frustrated, and those Iowans are our clients. But if the court is taking a furlough day, there's simply nothing we can do about it. Access to the court is closed on that day as we are seeing today. No one's in the courtroom today when traditionally we'd see a busy courtroom with our judges resolving disputes and issues.
But today, because of the budget crisis, we're not addressing those matters of the citizens of the state of Iowa.
I'd like to take one of our callers now. Bob is on the road this morning. And Bob, thanks for calling the Exchange today.
Hi, Janine. Thanks for taking my call. I hope you can hear me. I'm across southern Iowa where the cell service is not that great, so feel free to dump me if you have to.
Well, you sound good now.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to know from your guests, and I would like to have asked this question of the Chief Justice earlier. It seems like having 99 courthouses across the state is a throwback to the horse and buggy days, and why don't we consider regional justice centers sprinkled throughout the state, maybe six or seven of them, and I heard Judge Gamble say that some courthouses are already sharing clerks of court, so maybe that would be a good way to save some money. The problem with that will be is politics. I don't think the judicial system can handle the politics of that, but I'll take your answer. Thanks.
All right, Bob, thanks for that call. The Supreme Court Justice did sort of mention this in her condition of the state, saying they were sort of backing off the idea of closing clerk of court offices and eliminating clerk of court offices is in part because of the pushback from the legislature. What is that, a good idea? Is that a bad idea?
Well, as Bob mentioned, the court has had difficulty convincing the legislature that that is a good thing to do. We considered that on a prior occasion when we were in a budget crisis, and the legislature determined that we should not have regional litigation centers. Now that we've laid off so many people in our clerk of court offices, the savings from consolidation would be marginal. And the problem, there's some practical problems that I see with consolidation, because the court facilities in our state are county funded. There's 99 counties, 99 courthouses, and those courthouses are maintained by the counties. There were to be a consolidation in our southern Iowa counties, for example, the infrastructure isn't there to accommodate the larger courts. None of the counties in southern Iowa have a courthouse that's large enough to be a regional litigation center. And so while the savings in personnel would be marginal, the costs of the consolidation may outweigh the benefit.
Is there also concern, because anytime you talk about consolidation, this happens with schools as well, is that you have then a travel issue,
right,
where some Iowans, if facing difficulty with transportation, lose access to the courts?
Well, I think there's arguments on both sides of that issue. So clearly, the roads of the state of Iowa are much better today than they were in the horse and buggy days, or maybe even 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, in rural courts where people are struggling and need access to the courts, they may not have the ability to go to the adjoining county to file a domestic abuse protective order or to seek the commitment of one of their loved ones because of a mental health problem. Mm-hmm. So the point of access in each county serves a legitimate purpose, we're just attempting to have sufficient staff to keep the offices open and to serve the public.
All right. Jane, is that something the Iowa State Bar Association has a position on?
The Iowa State Bar Association has certainly studied the matter. And, you know, Bob's suggestion would seem to make sense. There have been studies conducted that show the savings are not that great. There was a professor from Iowa State by the name of Professor Edelman who studied this issue in 1995. The result of that study was that what you see is actually a cost from the state to the counties. The counties would need to then pay for the transportation of prisoners. They need to pay their county attorneys to travel further. They need to pay their jurors to travel further. And so what happened is there's a cost shifting to the counties, which in turn result in an increase in property taxes. So we need to think good, long and hard about this before we go to regionalized litigation centers.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation this afternoon, please call us at 1-866-780-9100. Again, that number, 1-866-780-9100. My guest today, the president of the Iowa State Bar Association, Jane Lorenzen, and the chief judge of Iowa's 5th Judicial District, Arthur Gamble. John is on the line with us from Iowa City. John, thanks for calling the Exchange.
Thank you. I'd like to give a specific example of cost shifting that has happened because of the cutbacks. The judges have to do several hundred sentencing orders each week, and without the help of their clerks, they can't get them done. Because of scheduling, most of the sentencing orders would come out on a Friday. If you have a furlough on a Friday, they don't come out at all. The people who would normally be released Friday afternoon are released Monday afternoon and in some cases on Tuesday. So the cost is shifted from the state to the county, who's paying the extra cost of having these people in jail over the weekend. So, I mean, we're really not saving any money. We're actually increasing the cost of government. I'll take your response offline. Thank you.
Thanks, John, for that call. So in some ways, the state budget cuts are increasing costs, according to John, on the local communities or local counties. Are you finding that, Judge Gamble?
I agree with that. I'm finding that particularly in Polk County, and we're struggling very mightily with our efforts to keep the jail population under control in Polk County. But when we're not open on a furlough day, we're not doing court in the jail courtroom or in our criminal courtrooms in Polk County, and the result of that inevitably is delay. If the clerk's office does not have sufficient staff to process the paperwork, particularly following a furlough day where the paperwork stacks up in the lawyer's offices, then the result is going to be delay and inefficiency. And when we are inefficient, that does have a direct impact on our ability to clear the jails. As jail population increases, that increases the cost of the county. So, yeah, John is exactly right.
And these people in jail, Jane, while they may have committed a crime, they may not have, I mean, if they're waiting to be sentenced, they're still citizens who deserve access to the courts. So that delay is not only difficult for the local community housing the prisoner, but also difficult for the prisoner and the family and the... Is it not?
It's absolutely difficult for the defendant who's behind bars and needs to be released. There's just no doubt that the budget crisis has affected all citizens of the state of Iowa, whether you be a criminal defendant, a person coming into court for a dissolution of marriage, or a victim of domestic abuse. The furlough days are an impediment to access to justice.
Should the courts have been exempt from furlough days? You know, other agencies, state government agencies, took that. So that does mean Iowans who might access Department of Human Services face that. What do you think, Judge Gamble? Should the courts have been exempt from that, or is it fair that the courts go through that?
In my opinion, the courts should be exempt from furlough days. I think that the courts should never be closed, and I think it is a sad commentary on our state and society in general that we think it's okay to close the courts and limit the access of the public to justice. The reason that the courts are closed for furlough days is because without furloughs, then we would have had to lay off even more employees. And we frankly are down to the point where we are below a skeletal staff. We're at a point where we don't have sufficient employees to keep the doors open in southern Iowa, and we don't have sufficient employees to handle the volume of paper that continues to come into the court. So it's kind of a Hobson's choice. If we had not done the furlough days, then we would have had substantially more layoffs because, as the chief said, in order to cut our budget, we have to cut personnel because our budget is 95% personnel costs.
And is it almost a double whammy in the sense that those who live in southern Iowa sometimes are facing tougher economic times than those in other parts of the state, and they're also facing less access to justice because of that? I mean, is there sort of a...
I think that's true. But I think that there are folks in Polk County and in the surrounding counties around Polk, both in the 5th District and to the north, that struggle to get in to see the judge as well. I was in the courthouse on one of our furlough days very recently, and members of the public were coming to the courthouse to try to pay fines. Just as the chief said, they had the money. They had the cash that day. That's when they were going to pay their fine. They didn't know the court was closed, and they weren't happy.
Sure. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Joe in Des Moines. Joe, thanks so much for calling The Exchange today.
Thanks, Janine. say, I've got two questions for the panel, and I appreciate the topic today. My first question is has to do with cost drivers, and to what extent do civil versus criminal cases drive the court's workload? That's the first question. And then the second question has to do with ways to improve judicial performance. How can we work to, or what ways can we work to reduce the load on the Supreme Court when we have cases that otherwise perhaps if they had been handled differently or better, they would not have needed to go on to appeal? Those are my two questions.
All right, Joe, let's start with the first. I don't know if one of you is better suited to answer these, so feel free to jump in. Judge Gamble, first of all, is there a larger cost with criminal versus civil, or are both just factors of the court that have to be?
Well, they are both business of the state that only the court can do. Criminal courts are cases are courts where controversies and disputes between the state of Iowa and citizens of the state arising out of alleged violations of criminal law are decided. On the civil side, the courts are the primary system for the adjudication of disputes between citizens. And the court is uniquely qualified to perform those functions. We do both. The numbers would probably indicate a higher number of civil cases than criminal. In our budget cutting, we've established priorities, and our priorities will be criminal cases, particularly where speedy trial has not been waived and individuals in jail, domestic cases and juvenile cases involving children, cases involving public safety, safety of individuals, individual rights, and civil litigation falls further down the scale of priorities. So as we prioritize our work in these lean times, we're going to be spending more resources on criminal litigation and less on civil. And that it has an unfortunate effect on business, I believe. What was the second question?
Well, I was going to throw that to Jane only because maybe you can speak to this. His question was, are cases being adjudicated properly so that they don't end up in the Supreme Court? In the Iowa Supreme Court, you know, are you finding that if the lower court handled it properly, in your view, and that's so subject to one's opinion, that they wouldn't ever reach that level?
Well, we have a very fine judicial system in the state of Iowa because our judges are selected based upon merit selection. So you have to keep in mind that it's every person's right to appeal an adverse decision to them. So we never want to close that right to the citizens of the state of Iowa, and they should always have the option open to appeal a judgment that they feel to be wrong.
You mentioned the merit system. Let's talk a little about that. We spoke with the Supreme Court Chief Justice about that. Iowa's justices currently appointed then face retention elections. There's proposed resolutions in the Iowa House that would say no, they should be elected from the get-go. Jane, what do you think about that?
Well, on its face, it appears to be something that would be fair. Why shouldn't we elect our judges? But let me tell you, it's not a good idea, and here's the reason. Money. When you have candidates for a political office running against each other, they are concerned about raising money for their campaign coffers. That doesn't make for a good judge. Our judges are selected based upon their integrity, their professionalism, their smarts. And the Judicial Nominating Commission puts applicants through a very rigorous application process, not only written, but an oral interview. And from there, they choose three people to nominate to the governor, and then the governor selects a judge. Our judges, nevertheless, are accountable to the public in their retention elections. So we've got the best of both worlds in this system.
Judge Gamble, what do you think? Should it change back to electing judges, or would that open up the system, as Jane said, to concerns about money, about influence? Because you're eventually going to see possibly somebody that gave money to a campaign in your courthouse.
Well, I think it would be a huge step backwards. I, as an experienced trial judge in the state of Iowa for 25 years, I've seen the benefits of our merit selection system, and I've had the benefit of traveling to states for judicial conferences and educational programs and visiting with judges from jurisdictions where they run for election. And the fact of the matter is that if you're in a state where you're running for election, there is no question that, at least subliminally, that you will consider the political consequences of your decisions. In Iowa, we don't have that concern. In Iowa, what we worry about is whether, based upon the evidence that is introduced in our proceeding and the law that applies, whether we're arriving at a just result. We don't worry so much about the political consequences of our decisions or what the headline's going to be in the newspaper the next day. We don't worry about whether or not we're going to have to raise money from the lawyers that appear in front of us or from the companies that they represent. We have a system that's clean and clear from politics, and I think that it very much benefits the citizens of our state.
Judge Gamble, thank you. Jane Lorenzen, thank you for your time, both of you. I appreciate it. We're out of time. You've been listening to The Exchange, produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins. Our production assistants today from Rosalind Sixby and John Pemble and Dennis Reese. Thanks for listening. I'm Janine Beck. This is Iowa Public Radio.